Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. We want to welcome to the show someone we're really delighted to have on, and it's Adam from I Kissed a Boy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Aww. Hi, Graham. How's it going?
Yeah, really good. What made you say yes, firstly, to actually going on I Kissed a Boy?
Do you know what? I never thought I would do reality TV, if I'm being completely honest. I have a very normal job, live a normal, very normal life. And the opportunity kind of presented itself to me last summer. And I got a message on Instagram. And
who messaged you? Like
one of the producers.
Right, yeah, one of the casting people.
One of the casting people. And they said, have you ever thought about doing this? And I thought, well, no, but I kind of believe in, I'm a bit of a hippie, and I believe in the universe. And I just thought, actually, this could be a really great way of kind of being representation for people who are living with HIV. And I get to go on holiday.
Nice.
You know?
Okay, so that happened. And did they know you were HIV positive or not at that point? Did they select you because you were out about your status? Or at that point, was that not something you disclosed?
No, I didn't disclose that in my like my normal life at all. The only people who kind of knew I was HIV positive were my family, of course, and then my really close friends. I had friends that I didn't tell because, you know, you shouldn't have to tell everyone in your life. And
exactly.
Yeah, so they didn't know. When I was going through the casting process, there were questions about why did you want to do the show? And I was very open about doing it. I kind of went on the show with a mission to be representation, so mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay. So you, what did you in the casting process, did you say at that point, or did it just come out whilst you were doing the recording?
I kind of like, you have to fill out a form, you see, and like there's different questions, and one of them was like, why do you want to do the show? Mm-hmm. and I was quite open about it, and then we had loads of we spoke about it like multiple times, you know, about the impact of doing it on me, the impact that it could have on other people, and yeah, why I really wanted to do it. I think sometimes when people maybe go on reality shows or go on any show, they go on it with like a mission or an aim. Some people go on it to get famous, other people go on it to do good. Some people go on it just to, you know, have a life experience, and they're all totally fine.
Yeah.
Like reasons. Mine was just to be representation and kind of live my truth.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
So when you walked into the villa, obviously you knew your status. Were you planning to share it all along, or, you know, because there was that moment you told the group, was that spontaneous, or had you kind of rehearsed that in your head 100 times before you did it?
God, no. Like I was a bloody, I was a wreck throughout the entire thing. I was so nervous about saying it. I knew I was going to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of imagined that I would be saying it, you know, sat on a sun lounger with someone who I'd like fall in love with. And like, I kind of romanticized this whole moment.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I really, like the whole conversation with Lars about being trans and the discrimination that he's felt himself, I was just really blown away by his like openness and honesty.
Uh-huh.
And I just felt like, okay, this is really the moment. I had no idea what I was gonna say.
Uh-huh.
And actually, when you watch the show, the way that they have edited it is very, very similar or pretty exact to how it was as a moment. Like they've mm-hmm. captured the emotion but also the joy and like the release of emotion from myself and all of the other boys. It's just really like I mean, they outdid themselves, really. I don't know how they did that, because there's, you know, you're talking about it for at least half an hour, and they've just edited it in a way where it kind of captures all of that half an hour.
Mm-hmm. So how did the other guys react off camera? Was it all as supportive as it looked? Was it kind of quite an affirming experience? God.
I honestly, like, I can't even explain how, like, beautiful that moment was for me.
Yeah.
And not just, I mean, the cast members all reacted with such love and support, and it's truly like a moment that I will hold close to my heart for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just the cast members. It was like all of the production team, welfare, the cameramen. Uh-huh. Like after I said what I said, and then I got up because I was like, I need to just leave the situation and process what I've just said.
Sure, that makes sense.
All of the team, like literally all of production, all of welfare, everyone came up to me, hugged me. I was like crying because it was a release of emotion, and it was just really lovely. Like, it was really, really lovely.
Isn't it interesting? It makes sense to me personally, but it's interesting how when people come out about their HIV status, there is this kind of like release of emotion, isn't there? Was it similar to when you told maybe family or close friends, like you told me about before? Was it a bit similar to that? Because there's this kind of like rush of lots of stuff coming out of people after they've had that moment, isn't there?
Do you know what? I wouldn't say maybe the release of emotion is the same, but it's a very different. I'm in a very different time now than when it was when I was diagnosed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like. Because I've had time to process what the diagnosis is and what it actually means, how the world views it, etc. And it was just, I don't know how to describe it, but it was an outpour of like acceptance. And I just felt like, because the thing is, I could go to a cafe now. Not all cafes would, people in there would know me, but like I could go to a cafe and they would possibly associate me with HIV.
Uh-huh.
So I don't need to tell anyone anymore, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't have to keep in this secret about having HIV. And I'm really grateful for that, because not many people have that. And, I think it's like... it's actually funny. When you watch that scene, right at the end, I say, "Here I bloody am." And I say that as like... a nervous kind of thing. I'd like try to make everything into comedy, but that really is it. Like, here I am, like, this is me 100% now. Mm-hmm. So I'm so grateful to be able to just live authentically.
Did you feel pressure to be the HIV guy, or do you think you were able to just stay grounded and just be just Adam?
Yeah, this is a good question, because
that could happen, couldn't it, I guess, in some scenarios.
Yeah.
Or some, you might feel that way. Yeah,
totally. Like, I think it's a really good question. I think when I went on the show, I knew I was gonna come out with my HIV status. Mm-hmm. And I knew possibly I would be referred to as like the HIV guy. I think after watching the show, I've just realized I'm so much more than that, and like, it really is just part of my story. It's not my whole story.
Yeah.
So, I think more of anything, I am quite funny, and I like to help people and support people. And I think by using my story and trauma and I suppose way of life as well, like I have done that. So I'm happy to be labeled as the HIV guy, but I'm definitely more than just HIV.
Of course,
it's just a very small part of me.
Yeah, it's just one bit of your identity, and that's the thing, isn't it? Like, there's a lot of people nowadays have said that HIV nowadays, it's so much, people don't die from HIV anymore. People can go on PrEP.
Mm.
It's not such a big deal. I don't know why people are bothered. And it's such... Yeah. I find that such a glib and offhand way of dealing with HIV. That's someone who's never experienced the... It is a trauma when you're diagnosed with HIV, because you're dealing with, essentially, when you're diagnosed is other people's stigma from the past, because I feel like a lot of people aren't completely up to date with how it is nowadays. So we're carrying a lot of stuff that's gone on in the past with us when we're diagnosed, and people don't understand that it is traumatic. That, and I think a lot of the issues now are not so much are you physically okay, it's actually more are you mentally okay because of all that weight of sort of past stigma and shame. Does that make any sense to what I've just said there?
Oh my God, like total sense. Yeah. I think when people are diagnosed, they think, you know, they have a picture of like historical references, like stuff like It's a Sin.
Yeah.
It's an amazing series, but it shows a very different time of HIV and people died. Like, some people survived, but the majority died, and they were really ill and they had lesions and like all of these things. And actually now, when you think about it, people aren't like that.
No.
People look very healthy. They look like, you know, I'm going to use my fingers for this to say this, but like normal. They look normal to what kind of is the norm to society.
You can't tell, but you cannot tell if someone's got HIV.
No, you can't at all. And, you know, like you could be walking down a street and someone could walk past you with HIV. You wouldn't know that. You just wouldn't know.
Totally.
But you're right. It's the mental strain that it has on you that I think is that this is why charities like Terence Higgins Trust and these amazing charities need to keep on operating, because it's the mental side that can take people out, and people are struggling still, you know, like it's quite a big thing for someone to go through in their life.
Completely. Yeah. How did you deal with your HIV? Was it a while ago for you? I'm not aware of this bit, but how did you deal with that in the immediate aftermath? And by the immediate aftermath, I don't mean the days and the weeks afterwards. I feel like the reaction to a positive HIV diagnosis takes place over the course of the next 5 years or longer as you react to news.
Well, it's been 5 years now.
Okay. And how was, what was your sort of reaction to the news? Other than this, obviously, because this is a reaction, I guess, essentially, a little bit.
This is a reaction. I was really broken, I think.
Yeah.
I think gay men in our society, we really fear getting HIV, you know, chlamydia, gonorrhea, you can get treatment and get rid of.
HIV is the big fear, isn't it, still?
HIV is the big fear that you can't get rid of, and there's not enough education around it. I think we're getting there, absolutely. But I was really broken and I was really uneducated and I didn't really know what it meant, if I'm being completely honest. And it took a real impact on my mental health. And, you know, I went straight into therapy and counseling, funded by myself. Like, I went private for therapy, and I actually used a couple charities for the counseling side to kind of start building that community. Mm-hmm. With people living with HIV. And I went to events for the sole purpose of meeting other people who have HIV.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to ask them questions that, like, questions about dating and how you disclose it to, you know, if you're on a date with someone, because no one talks about that. And as a young gay man who wants a husband, How am I going to tell, you know? So, like, I had to put myself in those situations to then really understand what it meant for me, basically. But a lot of therapy, a lot of time spending with my family and my friends, and a lot of research as well. I used the internet and TikTok and Instagram to, like, see other people, hear what other people were talking about it who were living with it.
Do you remember there was an influencer probably about the period, if you're 5 years ago for you, so that's 2020, that's sort of lockdown era, isn't it? There was an influencer called Jay Hawkridge that used to be on TikTok, and he started to blow up, and he was just trying to debunk HIV myths. He came on the show in the beginning, I think. he was kind of trying to process his diagnosis but doing it very publicly, and then after that he's sort of like gone a lot more private now, and he's got his boyfriend and he gets on with his life. And I feel like people like him, people like you, going through what they're going through kind of publicly has really helped a lot of people. So you talked about how therapy helped you get to a place where you could speak up. What kind of started that journey for you in terms of your therapy journey? What happened there?
I think I just couldn't see the value in myself after being diagnosed with HIV. Like, I knew I was just really deeply depressed, if I'm being completely honest. Yeah. I was in a pit of depression. I suffered with really bad anxiety. I still do suffer to a degree. I'm much more leveled out now, and like, because I have been through years of therapy and I do put myself first a lot of the time now, which I think is what a lot of people should do. Mm-hmm. But I needed to create a really safe space between me and someone who didn't know me but was a trained professional to then talk about experiences that have, the experiences that have like made me who I am.
Yeah.
And not all of the experiences are good experiences, you know, like, some are really traumatic, and I think creating that space between client and therapist, it creates a really safe, loving, and professional space to talk about these things.
Yeah, the space is really interesting, isn't it? I had a therapist for like, I don't know, it must have been about a year and a half, two years worth of therapy. And she only lived along the road from me, but I never seen her in person. I only ever did ever did it online. And the space is a bit like I would describe it as the space between you as a kid at school, maybe in primary school, with a teacher that you really liked, but your teacher has to be professional and distant. And I feel like it was that kind of affirming. I really respected her and everything. And I think everybody should try it at some point. Do you think there's something about queer life, especially for gay men, HIV aside, that makes mental health struggles a bit more sort of complicated?
Oh, totally. I think we grow up in a world that we feel like othered, and we don't feel we fit in. And I think going through school, a lot of us are bullied or teased, or I mean, I don't even think you need to be teased or bullied to have trauma that you need to process later on down in life. But, you know, we're all children inside, and we take on the experiences of being a child into our adult life.
Yeah.
And some of us are lucky enough to go through therapy and process that and kind of let that go, but others aren't. And I think it's really important to talk about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being at school and just feeling so different to the other boys. I used to hate PE class.
Yeah, I did. Like, I did.
I think it's a lot of gay men hate the PE class because...
But then they hit the gym afterwards, which is always quite interesting, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But do you know what I mean? There's that intense dislike of PE. And then for some people, like myself included, like, I hate going to PE. And then afterwards, years later, I was like, oh, well, maybe I do kind of belong in the gym sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know whether if it's like, you know, you grow out of your adolescent, like, well, like, you grow into being an adult.
Yeah.
And then you realize, actually, I need to take care of my physical self as much as my mental self.
Yeah.
And then you start going to the gym. I mean, there's a massive conversation about beauty standards in the gay community.
Yeah, totally.
What is the ideal of what is beautiful or what is sexy or attractive? And, I think that all comes from childhood trauma about feeling less than.
Yeah, yeah, it's all connected.
Your schoolmates, yeah.
Tell me a bit more about school. Did you enjoy, that was just interesting to open that box there on school. Did you enjoy the experience of being at school? I'm not going to lie to you, I didn't really, looking back. It's quite tricky. What about you?
I think I had a good experience at school.
Yeah.
I mean, I did feel like an outsider because there was about, I think there was two gay people in my year,
mm-hmm.
or three actually, I think.
And they were out?
One of them was out. One of them was me, who came out when I was 16.
Right, yeah.
And then the other is actually my best friend still now.
Okay.
And I knew he was gay, but you know.
Yeah.
You have to let everyone come out of their own right. But I had a really good experience. I just hated PE class. I excelled at school. I was always like a go-getter. I got straight A stars at my A levels, and I just loved it. I loved being at school because I basically threw myself into like art class and photography and like all of that kind of creative stuff. And I just, that is literally where I'm happiest, like creating and making things. And I loved it. I was teased a little bit. Like I was teased, you know, you'd have like the boys who now are either in prison or they're not probably doing the best for themselves. And but I'd get small little things, but I was, you know, I can stand up for myself, so I would give it back to them.
That's so funny, isn't it? The people who were the top dogs at school, as you move into adult life, they tend not to be the top dogs. What do you wish queer men knew about HIV stigma and self-worth?
Yeah, I think, in general, I'm not just talking about HIV, but I think if people come from a bit more curiosity other than judgment, mm-hmm. I think the world would be a much nicer place. But unfortunately, we don't live in that world. I think it would be really great. Like, I suppose it goes back to like charities and sex education at school. Like, I think if we were actually taught about sex education in school, then maybe people would be a bit more safer in practicing safe sex. But also, if you do get something, there's not stigma around getting chlamydia or HIV or syphilis, like all of these things that are actually quite normal to get.
Yeah.
Like, it's just sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but there's such stigma around having these things, and there really just doesn't need to be, because when you look at the science behind getting HIV, it really, it really is just taking one pill, or you can get injectables now, which I think you get them every 3 months.
Yeah.
Or every, is it every, yeah, every
something
3 months,
like that. Yeah
And like, and then you just live a normal healthy life and you can't pass it on. It's just the negative stigma and misconceptions and judgment that comes from having HIV or knowing someone who has HIV that is the killer, really. I think more people have mental health issues from having HIV than physical issues.
100%. Yeah, that's definitely where the issues lie for most people nowadays. I think it's definitely with the mental health aspect of it.
Yeah.
Do you remember the moment you learned about U equals U? Because it's a real game changer, U equals U, isn't it? And that's why at any given opportunity, I will always quote it. Undetectable equals untransmittable. Once we get that out there, any sort of crazy arguments towards us are kind of, they're immediately won, aren't they? Well, so how did you feel when you learned about that? What did that shift? What did that shift something in your mindset?
I think, do you know what? I learned about it when I was first diagnosed. I was diagnosed in Reading, although I lived in London, but I had to move. I moved back to my mum's because I needed to process it in the country. And I remember a doctor, I was in the doctor's office, and he was telling me loads of stuff, and he was doing the test that you have to do in person. I can't remember what it's called, but they do a test in person. And he said it to me, first of all. And honestly, I didn't really listen to him because I didn't know. I was still processing everything.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And like, you see people like Jay, is it Hawkridge?
Yeah, Jay Hawkridge.
That you mentioned before. Yeah. He actually was one of the influencers that I found first when I was diagnosed, because he was very active at that time talking about HIV.
He was big on TikTok at that point. He was the only one doing it, actually.
And then there was also another another activist called Ellie Harrison,
yeah,
who we're actually really good friends now, but she is amazing. And the way that they communicate different things about HIV really made me feel seen. So I think, yeah, I think when I first heard it, I was like, well, what does that mean? Until you start looking into it. So that's why it's so important for these charities to keep on covering it, because you need to hear it several times for it to go in, I think. And especially if you don't have HIV or an interest in HIV, why would you read about it, you know?
Yeah, totally. It was, they made the message so clear and accessible, didn't they? Jay was largely just him dancing with no shirt on, going yeah. undetectable equals untransmittable, and he was getting some shit thrown at him by people, but he absorbed it. I think that had an impact on Jay, 100%. I think Jay sacrificed quite a bit of his own sort of mental well-being to put himself out there. Because look at the way Jay has since kind of retreated from doing that. You don't see so much of Jay anymore, do you? He's kind of getting on with his life a bit now, from what I see. Yeah. Just because he's done his bit, hasn't he, I guess?
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, he's done his bit and his priorities have changed in life now.
Yeah, I think so.
Why is that a bad thing to focus on love? And
yeah, no, totally.
Your relationship, I think it's great.
Yeah, no, I think so. He seems really happy when I've seen pictures of him. Dating as an HIV positive gay man, what's been harder, pre-telly or post-telly?
Oh God, Graham, I can't really answer this because I've no time for dates at the moment. But I can't even tell you I've been on a date because I haven't, because I've been so busy since May, and I know we're in September now, but I literally have not been on a date. I mean, I might have spoken to a few people, but I haven't been on an actual date, which is quite sad.
Isn't dating a funny concept, though, I always think? I think about the number of dates, per se, I've been on in my life. There's not many. For me, it was always, it was hookups that turned into relationships, or friendships that turned into hookups that turned into relationships. But there was no sort of... I must have been on about three dates in my life. You know, when you set it up as a date. So, yeah, I've never really been through that.
I used to be a serial dater. Like... I loved a date. I love planning a date. I love doing different dates. But then I don't know. I don't know if it's like life got in the way and I've just slowed down a bit. And then the show came out and I've sped up again. Yeah. I'm not actively going on dates and trying to find a boyfriend. I just think my perspective of life has changed post show. And, if it will be, it will come to me, and I will open, you know, I'll welcome it with open arms, but I'm not actively trying to find a boyfriend. I'm like, that's just not my priority.
I think that's
right
wise.
Now,
I think if you try and look for it, then it doesn't come. All the wrong people come along. I think sometimes if you try and looking for it, I don't know, it's been my experience. What's something people get wrong about dating someone with HIV?
This is a good question. I think there's a couple of answers. The first one is they think that, you know, if someone misses a pill or something, they might be able to get it.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it, that's not how it works. It might come up that people haven't processed things properly and it might prop up again.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you might have trust issues, or I definitely, when I was diagnosed, I had trust issues with men. I had a fear of rejection. And that definitely, I had to explore that in dating as well as just normal life, I suppose, and like working as well. I couldn't trust anyone. I had to do everything myself because I knew it was going to get done. And like, and that did come from being diagnosed with HIV, I think, because you almost feel, well, I almost felt a bit like cheated in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah. So I suppose just treat people with kindness, and if something does prop up, then allow them the space to process it.
Again, that's coming up, isn't it? The thing that will come up if anything comes up is someone's mental health first at the moment with HIV. That is top of the list for things that I think everyone will experience who's in a relationship with someone who's positive or who is themselves. I Kiss the Boy is like a really forward format, isn't it? Like kissing on entry. Did that dynamic help you or did it hinder real connections?
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I never thought about it like that. Well, I suppose we all knew we were going to do it. It's called A Kiss the Boy, and like that was the premise of the show. Yeah. And if you're in the original cast, you knew you were going to walk up to someone and kiss them. Like, I was really nervous for it. Like, I was really, really nervous for it. I think it actually benefits you better because you're automatically connected to someone. If you're in the original cast anyway, because you kiss them and then you do become friends with them quite quickly because you've just kissed. And like, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one.
I'd say now you're kind of a public figure. Yeah, you are. And you have a message and a campaign, yeah, really, even though it's low-key, you know. What's that been like for your mental health? That's a lot of pressure, actually.
It's a lot of pressure. It is a lot of pressure. And I wish I could say that it probably hasn't taken a toll. It has taken a bit a toll on my mental health because my whole life has changed. Like, you know, the amount, and I'm so grateful for this. I get messaged all the time saying how my story has helped people. And I think that is amazing. And that is exactly why I went on the show. And I'm so appreciative. But it's a lot of pressure to live up to. And at the end of the day, like, I am just a normal person and I have a 9-to-5 and I've been doing all the social media stuff on top of that as well. People treat you differently as well. Like, I definitely noticed a shift in probably who might be interested in talking to me. And I've just tried to stay really level-headed throughout the whole thing. And I have. And I am really proud of myself for that because sometimes you see it, fame goes to people's heads and then they think they're entitled to things or, well, I don't know really, but it does change someone. Mm-hmm. So it was always my goal to keep my head and like keep who I am as a person.
Adam, thank you so much for having a chat to us today. I really appreciate it. It's always good to get the kind of the lowdown from someone who's been on a show like I Kissed a Boy, but especially someone who's been through the set of experiences that you have that will resonate with a lot of our listeners. So thank you so much for catching up. Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net, top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.